You've entered the Celtic Centre with Adam and Cody. We've got a good one today, guys. We've got the mailbag followed by a game of start bench cut. We also put that out on Twitter, so we'll be reading out anybody that participated there. So, Cody, my man, how's it going?
It's going well, Adam. Another week closer to basketball season, which is always a fun one.
I'm missing it so badly, dude. I'm like watching random highlights here, there, and everywhere at the moment.
Yeah, so, I got baseball and football to keep me occupied, but nothing like some Celtics basketball.
Yeah, I'm going to be jumping onto the football once it starts. I'll get the league pass this year. So, jumping into this mailbag, the first question we've got is off at Cody Shalifu.
Asking, wow, who's that?
I know, dude. This Cody guy always comments weird shit. He's put, why do people still call me Cody? It's Corey. Cody, why do you change your name?
Okay, so, little inside joke that I have with my coworker. So at work, everyone always just calls me Corey. No matter how many times they say, it's Cody, hi, I'm Cody, how you doing? They always come back in, it's like, hey, Corey, how you doing? And every single time, my coworker dies laughing. So I said, I'm going to give up. I'm just going to give up. My name is now officially Corey. So it is Corey and Adam at the Celtic Center today.
No, you're Cody to me, dude. It's never changing. I'm sorry. I had to throw that in there, though.
Yes, so. It's always a fun time, the old Corey. And they're always so confident, too. Like, they know it's Corey. And it's completely not Corey. But you know what? It's the life I live. Someone's got to do it.
Yeah, that'd annoy the fuck out of me, dude. Right, so the first real question we've got is from at the 1L Shane, and he's asking, how important will Hayward be this season, and can he hit the heights of his pre-injury days? What's your thoughts here?
I've been saying that I think Gordon needed that rest, and I mean, we've said it multiple times, he had that extra surgery that really sort of took a little extra time than people expected. You know, everyone expected him to do the Paul George thing, he had a year off, and now you're going to be the same player. But it was more to that, I think, a full year of off-season work, working on his body, working on his game. Will he return to pre-injury where who we signed Hayward? Maybe not, but I'm not saying that's not going to be still going to be a good, effective player. I can see Gordon going out there and scoring 16 points a game. I can see him averaging 6 assists, a couple of rebounds, 4 assists, 6 assists, 4 to 6 rebounds a game, and being an overall solid contributor. Either running that second unit, which I kind of want him to do, at least in the beginning of the season, or being more naturally fit into that starting lineup and being kind of a lesser option, but still one of the top, probably the top, the third option on that team behind Kemba and behind Tatum. Are we going to see Utah Gordon? Like I said, most likely not, but if we get 85 to 90% of that, this contract goes from ugly to not as ugly.
And then what about, yeah, so here's the question. How much does having 80% to 90% of Utah Gordon really change the trajectory of how the Celtics are going to be this year? Because I think that's a huge, huge factor.
I think it could change it pretty good because there are two options you would go. Gordon, and that's either use him off the bench as sort of a Manu Ginobili type guy. I'm not saying he's going to be how Manu Ginobili was, but he's a really good starter caliber player when fully healthy that you're using off the bench. Manu easily could have started in his days in San Antonio, but they used him off the bench, and that was a big weapon to come in that second unit, and Gordon can kind of probably going to be the main ball handler depending on where they use Marcus Smart. Off that second unit, having that ability can really, really help because we saw all last year when the Celtics starters were in, they're one of the better teams in the league. But, you know, there's the inconsistencies and the bench and that guy who wore 12 before and all this other stuff. I think with Gordon coming into his own more and coming back from that injury and being more comfortable on the court, now that, you know, all the, you know, there was that the petty fighting about minutes and probably the Celtics front office was forcing Gordon into action a little bit early and just trying to basically throw him into the fire and just keep him in there. And it kind of burnt the Celtics and burnt Gordon. And then ended up burning young guys because they probably were deserving of those minutes that were given to Hayward, and they thought it was a whole ordeal and yada yada. But having a good Hayward, I think that, you know, makes this team probably the third, fourth best team in this conference. And I think if he has a 14 to 16 point game season, I think that solidifies like a third seed right behind Milwaukee, right behind Philadelphia. So Gordon's going to be very important this year, right?
Yeah, I agree. I feel like he can really change the way that we view him and the Celtics this year. Having him on the roster while he's like he was last year is kind of a non-starter in the terms of he hurts you more than he benefits you. We saw a lot of good play coming out of him in the playoffs, especially against Indiana, and he was picking it up towards the end of the year. I think having another ball handler and another facilitator alongside Kemba can really open things up for guys like Jalen and Jason as well.
Sorry, just takes weight off the shoulders. Not everyone has, you know, Kemba doesn't have to, you know, shoot 45 times a game because he knows that Gordon can come in and be that second guy. I mean, we signed Gordon to that max contract, and I think people don't understand that you kind of have to lure a player away. I feel like, you know, you see these John Wall contracts and these ugly contracts, but teams kind of have to sign those players to those contracts. Like, you're not going to let John Wall walk, because not only does it hurt you on the court, but, you know, fans don't show up to the game. There's a lot more to the game than just giving a player a contract based on his value. There's more on the court. There's more of the value to the community and stuff like that. So, Gordon was never brought in here to be the guy. He was always going to be the second option. He was always going to be the second option to Kyrie. And you had Al in the mix. We just had to pay him first guy money to lure him there. And I think that's the business part of the NBA. And if he can be that second guy, then that's what we paid him to be. Or maybe he'll be the third guy now. So it's a little bit of an overpay. But it was going to be an overpay regardless, I think. So I think if he just comes and just is that safety valve, that's fine.
I feel like he's going to be... it does all depend on what we get from him. I also think Tatum's showing already from the exhibition game that he's ready to take a jump this year, which changes the trajectory of the team again. I'm super excited, dude. I mean, this is all just guesswork at this moment in time. We haven't seen really any competitive basketball from these guys since they went away to start working on their game. So we'll move on. I hope that answered your question, though. We'll move on to Tom Lane at Celtics Sentinel. Tom's super cool, dude. He writes for us. He's been writing for Celtics Life for years. The guy's just a legend. And he's saying, the C's center position is a question mark. Can Poirier adapt quickly and effectively to the NBA and add that to his length and athleticism to make a very significant impact on the season? So basically, is Poirier going to be any fucking good?
Hopefully. I mean, I'd like it to be. We will see him in the World Cup. I know a lot of people are itching to watch World Cup play now that the basketball season is still a little bit away. I don't know if you caught any of the scrimmage the other night. I didn't see any of it, but I heard Jason Tatum played pretty well, and all four Celtics are still in the running to make the final cut of the team, which is dope.
I mean, the big thing for me before we jump onto Poirier was Tatum played well, Kemba played well, but Brown, dude, he was like, it wasn't good.
Yeah, I didn't see any of the scrimmage. I knew that Kemba played well. I know Kemba like broke someone, and then I know that Tatum was like the second leading scorer between all teams, or the leading scorer between both teams. We'll have to see. I like Jalen. I don't think if. With the roster they have, I can probably name 15 players better than Jaylen Brown. I mean, it's nice that he made that first wave of cuts. I don't expect him really to make the team. Honestly, the way Derek White's been playing, I'd probably rather go with Derek White over Jaylen Brown. I think Derek White brings, you know, what Jaylen does and is a little bit better defensively and has that playmaking element to his game as well. So if Jalen doesn't make the final cut, I'm not going to be all too surprised or all too worried. I just wanted to play well, and like I said, I didn't see any of the games, so if you're saying he didn't play well, then I'll take your word for it. I didn't really watch any of it. I think I went to bed at 9:30 that night. I have been tired.
No, he didn't play well. He didn't play much, and then when he did play, it just wasn't great. And this feels like it's becoming, I know it was only last year, but it feels like this is going to be what you get from Brown. He's just going to be slow to start the season each year, which isn't a bad thing if he's peaking towards playoff time, but in a contract year, you need to really take every chance that gets given to you.
Well, I think a lot of the reason, you know, he started so slow last year was just because of the role change and the role adaptation. I think that's the big reason why it was. He showed up pretty well, not last season, the season before, when he scored 14 when Gordon went down, that first season Gordon went down. I mean, he stepped up and played a lot better than I thought. So, I mean, it's one of those things where Jalen's not going to get all the touches and all the minutes and all the playing time to really show that, hey, like, I don't think he's going to ever reach his full potential in Boston. But that doesn't mean that he can't be a good player on Boston.
So back to Poirier, do you think he's going to be a guy that can contribute on this team, or do you see him playing behind Williams?
I think just because of his experience, he'll get, at least in the beginning, we'll start getting more minutes than Williams. If he has a Daniel Tice type season, Daniel Tice's first season, he played solid. If he does something like that, we're not expecting him to play 30 minutes a game. If you have Cantor, you have Tice, you have Williams, I think it's going to be a heavy rotation between either three or four of those guys, at least at the five. Some of them, I think Tice could maybe play the four in some lineups, because he can space the four a little bit. But
okay, fair enough. I think that he's going to play well. I can see him being a lob threat, just because of how big he is and how quick he can get up and down the court. He's also going to add really, really good length on the defensive end when it comes to grabbing boards. I'd like to see some time with him and Tice on the court together, just because Tice can stretch the floor while he's rim running. I know Cantor can do that, but I've got a feeling that Poirier is going to be a little bit quicker in transition, which obviously plays well when you're going against smaller lineups. So I don't know. I feel like he's going to be, I'm not going to say he's going to be a success, but he might be a low-key pickup that comes good.
Yeah, like, we're not asking to be a defensive player of the year or lead the league in blocks or anything, but if you can have a Daniel Tice-esque first season the way that Daniel Tice had his first season, I think that's a solid pickup. I mean, I've been saying that Daniel Tice, you can't really play more than 12 minutes or 15 minutes because he starts getting kind of bullied. But I think Poirier is a little bit thicker, I think. Like I said, I still haven't seen a lot of Poirier, so that's why I'm kind of waiting for this World Cup so I can see him more. Probably playing behind Gobert. But I, you know, if he just rebounds the ball and protects the rim, that's all we're asking him to do. You know, be a lob threat, set good picks. That's all we're asking him to do. So if he just does that, then that's a success as it is. Whether he plays, does that for 20 minutes, whether he does that for 8 minutes. I mean, if he just does that and isn't a liability defensively, I'm fine with all that. Like, that's chill by me.
Yeah, I'm down with that. I feel like he's just going to, you know, 8 to 10 minutes a game to begin with, see what he does. If he starts putting up numbers, then you increase his workload depending on who's struggling at that moment in time. I'm really happy with the depth we have at big. You know, I don't feel like an injury is going to really fuck us.
Yeah, I mean, I think if worst comes to worst, if we have to play Rob, you have to kind of force him in. I mean, he gave some pretty good energy. Like, the minutes, everyone wanted him to play more and more and more. And I think I was the only person on the planet Earth that said, like, no more Rob Williams. It wasn't because I hated the guy. I just think that he needed a little bit more time. And I think Poirier, you know, one of them goes down, God forbid, or one of them's struggling, I'm confident with our guys that we can at least stay relevant, you know? Stay relevant. We're not going to have it.
With Horford. If Horford went down, we were fucked.
Yeah, I think one more year, Rob Williams, one more year at Tice, Enes Kanter in the mix now, Poirier, hopefully, what we'll see from him. hopefully, you know, it just is enough. It's enough to be where it's not a liability. Where it might not be your strongest, and definitely won't be our strongest position, but it's not like, oh God, every center in the league scoring 96 on us.
Yeah, so which is a big thing, dude. And I also feel like the year of, like last year, where role players were just cutting us to pieces, it was just, which random role player is going to destroy us this game? I feel like having the bigs that are able to clog the lane a bit more, and then having a guy like Kemba that speaks more, so he's going to be talking on offense and defense, I'm not so worried about getting destroyed by random role players this year.
Yeah, it seems like, you know, like you said, it seems like there's always that those one or two players on each team that isn't the star, but they just have their day against the Celtics, and hopefully that just stops, because that just makes me want to drink.
Yeah, it was too much, dude. Last year was just like, you look at the score, and some random guy that's been averaging like 5-2 all year has just got put up like 28.
Yeah, it's like, what are you doing? You barely made the NBA. Why are you doing good against my team?
What the fuck are you even doing off the bench, dude? But coaches picked up on that as well. They were like, for some reason, these no-name guys were fired up to play against the Celtics.
Well, I think, you know, you have, being the Celtics, wow, almost just had a stroke there. Did you hear that? but, you know, they were the golden team. They were supposed to win 60 games. They were supposed to push the Warriors. They were supposed to run through the Eastern Conference. So everyone was like, even though, you know, the Cavs were, it was a wide open race. The Cavs were no more because LeBron went west. So it's like, those are the guys that we have to beat every single time. You know, they say a championship team, you get every single team's best every night. And that's what they got. They were treated like a championship team until everyone's like, wow, these dudes suck. And then they still beat their ass. That sucked, though.
But, so, you know, we've got a question. This is like a two-part question from at MemeHub247.
Ooh, I love it.
Yeah, it's a cool name, huh? So he's put, this is part one of the question, and then I'll elaborate. So part one is, if Minnesota puts Kat on the trade block, do you think, ooh, I nearly had a stroke then, do you think the front office should go all in on acquiring him, giving up every asset besides Kemba, Tatum/Brown, even if it means going into the luxury tax? He's then come back and gave us a trade possibility that he's put together. Personally, there's far too many fucking picks here. Okay, so the Timberwolves would get Hayward and Brown, and then 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. 6 firsts. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, and 8 seconds.
That's a haul. I mean, I just pull up this thing. We also get a Kogi. We also get, you know, Napier and some throw-ins. I'm all in for Karl Anthony Towns. I've said it. Right now, in terms of overall skill set, Karl Anthony Towns might be the most talented offensive big man of all time.
Yeah, like, I'm not going to argue.
He can go back to the basket, mid-range, three-pointer, off the dribble, can score in the post and score out of the post. I mean, defensively, he's okay. He blocks shots. He's a rebounding monster. This kid is special. Maybe not 14 total picks special, but if he does go out on the trade market, and I would trade basically any young guy we had right now. I would trade Jalen. Jason, I might trade if they wanted Tatum and we get to keep some of the picks, like some of our young guys, instead of like giving out our entire like bench. I would trade Jason Tatum for him. I really would. And I love Karl Anthony Towns. And it's one of those things where the same thing what we said with Anthony Davis. Right now, Karl Anthony Towns is probably a top 15 player right now. There's no doubt in my mind he's going to be a top 5 player one of these days. He could be a top 10 player coming into this year. I mean, I'm just going to quickly look up the stats, but he's been a 20-12 guy for his entire career. I mean, he had one of the better offensive, better rookie seasons that anyone's ever had. I mean, look at this guy. His career numbers of 22-12, almost 2.5 assists, shoots 40% from three on 50 and 53% from the field for his career. Has a 25 career PER and 15 is average, so he's playing well above average. His third year, he had a little bit of decline, mostly because of Tibbs being there. I think this year, towards the second half, when Ryan Saunders was there, they really let him go. I think next year we're going to see an absolute monster of a player in Karl Anthony Towns, offensively at least. And I think Brad Stevens using Karl Anthony Towns, that's scary. That makes me, you know, just tremble.
The only thing I disagree with is the being willing to put Tatum into the trade. I understand it's going to be, they're going to want Tatum if they're losing Towns.
I'd give that.
The only thing is, I'd want to see them two playing together, you know? If you're losing Brown already, I guess if you trade away Tatum, then you're pretty much guaranteeing that Brown gets re-signed at the end of the year or gets extended at that point. Do you think giving up Tatum and keeping Brown and then pairing Kat with Kemba makes you a contender?
Yes. In the Eastern Conference, yes.
Yes. And then you'd assuming that Hayward's going to have to be part of the trade as well just to match the money.
Yep. Well, this trade will most likely happen next year. I think Karl Anthony Towns stays in Minnesota no matter what for this whole year.
Okay, so at which point you've let Brown walk already, or you've re-upped on him knowing that he's going
to... You would most likely sign and trade to add Jaylen Brown to that. It would most likely... If they went, you get to keep, because think about it, we also have Grant Williams, the second year Grant Williams. Hopefully, you know, depending on how they view Langford and how he does. So here's a hypothetical. Into next year, I believe Karl Anthony Towns, has he already signed his extension?
I don't know. I can pull it up.
Or this year he has an extension possible. I don't know if his contract is shown on NBA reference.
I'll get it up.
Say he signs an extension this year, a max extension, for a sign and trade with Jaylen Brown, who gets the $20 million or whatever if he has a good season. Because you also have to think, if Jaylen Brown's getting that money, that means he had a good season, which means players are good. People are going to be higher on him. So that means if he has that good season, that Buddy Hield type season that Brennan keeps talking about, he gets the $20 million worth, or $25 million worth, that means he's worth that money, and someone wants to pay him that money. It could be Minnesota. On top of that, if you add Jason Tatum, you might only have to give up one pick, or one or two picks. You also get to keep, depending on how the money would work, they'd probably put Gordon in that to make the money work. Say they did Jason Tatum, Gordon Hayward, Jaylen Brown, and one first round pick.
Oh no, that guy's signed his extension already, dude.
Oh, he has you? So either way. So you're still gonna absorb that money at the end of the day anyway. If you have to trade Gordon to make the deal work, which you most likely will, fine. Because I think he's gonna be good, but I don't think he's gonna be Karl Anthony Towns good. I mean, Karl Anthony Towns is one of those things where, do you think Jason Tatum is going to be a top 10 player at some point in his career?
Yes.
And that's a valid, you know, whatever. Do you think Karl Anthony Towns is a borderline top 10 player right now?
That's the thing. Definitely. He is, dude. I mean, he's been fantastic for years now.
Yeah, I don't think he's top 10. I think he's right outside the top 10. I think depending on where... I think I have him 14th, 15th. But there's no question in my mind that by the end of, you know, by the end of next year, by the end of the year after that, he's going to be a top 10, potentially even top 5 player. I mean, he's coming into historical, he's put up historical offensive numbers, and if he just improves a little bit defensively, it's a shit show. It's going to be a nightmare for people. I mean, this is, and if Joel Embiid was more efficient from 3-point land, Joel Embiid would probably be the best player in the NBA. If he had Karl Anthony Towns' skill set, that's what we're saying. If we are giving the best players Karl Anthony, the best players in the NBA right now, Karl Anthony Towns' skills. It's one of those things where he's just so good right now. And it's Jason Tatum. I'd probably think Jason Tatum will be a top 10 player one day, probably top 15 for being a little bit more realistic. But that doesn't mean he's going to get there. But you have the chance right now to get a top 10 player, potentially. I do that trade. If we're keeping Kemba, you pair him up with Karl Anthony Towns, and potentially you have Romeo Langford, and if he shows up and does what I hope he does, you have him to be that Jaylen Brown guy off. You still have Marcus Smart. You still have all these this stuff.
Carson Edwards, dude. Don't forget about Carson Edwards.
Yeah, Carson Edwards. You have the 7-foot dude also. I don't know. I just think he's – I would go for him. I would go for him whatever it costs.
Okay, so the last question is from Instagram. We're trying to grow on Instagram right now. If you listen to us, please follow us on Instagram. It's from Bitchy Ass Brian. I like the name. I like the name.
All right, Brian, I see you.
We'll see what you're doing, Brian.
Didn't have to do any research. Yeah, didn't have to do any research to figure out who you is.
Being that the Celtics have beat the Bucks without Irving in the team during a playoff series, and now they're the weaker team than last year, how do the Celtics match up in a potential playoff matchup versus the Bucks? So it's quite a wordy way of saying, are the Celtics going to be okay if they get matched up against the Bucks?
No, we're getting manhandled.
Yeah, they were going to get bitch slapped everywhere.
Yeah, Bitchy Brian, we're going to get bitch slapped. Did they regress? Yeah, they lost some of their spacing. Malcolm Brogdon being gone, Hurts and Nikola Mirotic, you know, going to Europe for $90 million a season. That hurts, but they're still the Bucks. I mean, they still have Giannis, who's the most dominant player right now. They still have, you know, Splash Mountain, the greatest player to ever grace a basketball court. They gave him his brother. They have good pieces still. It's not like they lost Chris Middleton. Like, they lost Malcolm Brogdon, who's a good player, really good player, I think worth the $20 million from what he gives you. And you lost a good three-point shooter. Who says they can't trade for one like they did this year? Nikola Mirotic was a deadline trade. Who says they can't do that again? I think Milwaukee, it's Milwaukee-Philadelphia. I really don't see another team really competing, unless it's, you know, barring injury or barring a weird trade, a superstar trade that no one sees coming. But it's not fun. Because who's going to guard Giannis?
I ain't got an answer for you, dude. I know that Giannis is going to have his way with us. We lost our Giannis stuff as soon as Horford left.
I mean, you have the way that Toronto defended Milwaukee. They basically just put Kawhi on him and had Serge Ibaka or Marc Gasol basically just be there in case he drove and got by Kawhi. We don't have that. We don't have anyone nearly as good on the perimeter. I mean, Marcus Smart's a good perimeter player, but he's not going to guard Giannis. He's fucking a foot taller than him. I don't care how good you are on the perimeter. Marcus Smart is looking like Isaiah Thomas defensively when he's guarding. Like, that's just what it is. He'll scrap and try, but Giannis is a foot bigger than him. That's not happening. We don't have a kind of a beefy boy down low like with the defensive capabilities of Marc Gasol. We have Enes Kanter, but I'd rather throw a wet paper bag out there defensively.
I mean, I guess that's where we hope that Poirier comes in and he can just be a buddy, dude. He's a big
hopefully. I mean, we don't have an Aaron Baines. It's almost like we
could really use an Aaron Baines.
We really could use an Aaron Baines.
So moving on, we're about to enter the second section of the podcast where we're going to play Start, Bench, Cut. Cody, I know you were happy when I told you we were going to be playing this game.
Yeah, I mean, it's a fun game to play, and I think we're going back to the through different generations of Celtics greats, I believe, is on tap for today.
So the way it's going to work, the way we're going to do this, is I'm going to read out 3-point guards.
Right.
We'll make our decisions, then I'll go through who made who participated on Twitter. Then we'll do it for shooting guards, more forward, and so forth.
Word.
Okay. So at point guard, we've got Kuzi, Rondo, and IT. Isaiah Thomas, in case you don't know who IT is and you think we're talking about a computer. Cody, who you got?
This is going to be an interesting one. Are we going to set the parameters of how they did while on the Celtics? So, like, if we talk about
Isaiah. Oh, yeah, so it's all based on how you were when you was a Celtics player. When if you went somewhere else and you were great, we don't care.
All right, dope. And here, this is where I'm going to go, and this is why. I'm going to go start Bob Cousy. I'm going to bench IT and cut Rondo.
Oh, wow.
Yes, and here's why. I'll give you the reason why. Obviously, Rondo and Bob Cousy are very similar in styles. I mean, Cousy obviously played way, you know, before any one of us were alive. And Rajon Rondo was, you know, the Celtic to give us another championship. But they play very similar. They're both very good passing the ball, some of the best passers in their generation. And that's what their main thing was. Rondo was definitely a better rebounder, definitely. But Cousy had multiple seasons. He had 6+ rebounds. He was an all-star every meaningful year in his career. He had 1 year in Cincinnati where he was a player coach at the age of 41, played 7 games and played 5 minutes a game. Other than that, any season of actual value, all with the Celtics, all an all-star, led the league in assists 8 times. Had 9.5 his age 31 season. Had 4 20-point campaigns and a bunch of 19 to 18-point campaigns there as well. His field goal percentage looked pretty dumpy. Never had a year when he shot over 40%. But I'm just going to chalk that up to that's a different game. This is a different era. And if you look at his free throw percentages, I'm going to say that he definitely had the ability to shoot better than Rondo did based on his free throw percentages, because they kind of correlate. So I'm going to go Bob Cousy to start it off. I'm taking Isaiah Thomas, because here's why. I think Isaiah Thomas' scoring ability off the bench would pair up with Bob Cousy a lot more than Rajon Rondo basically doing what Bob Cousy does off the bench.
Okay, that's fair. That's fair. I can't argue with that.
It's hard when you have these all-time greats and some of the best to ever play. I think, you know, Dennis Johnson's left off of this list. But it was just one of those things where we had to get everyone involved, all eras.
Yeah, and some people don't get that. Some guy was throwing me a little bit of shade for not having Dennis Johnson. But again, like, you know, half the people that listen to this podcast probably don't even know who Dennis Johnson is. So
yeah, that's a shame.
Yeah, it is a shame. And I'm not saying that you guys listening don't know, but you have to understand there's going to be some younger guys that are listening that you want to keep them involved too. So I would go Cousy and Rondo simply because I understand where you're coming from, that IT backs up what Cousy better than Rondo because they do different things and you've got the scoring punch.
Right.
For me, it adds continuity to have two. I like my point guards to be pass first. I'm old school like that.
Right.
So I'm always going to lean towards a pass-first point guard. Cousy and Rondo, to me, can facilitate all day long, especially with some of the other players that are going to be on these lists. Now, when we put this out on Twitter, Tom, who's again a writer for us, decided he didn't like the people we put up on the lists. So he's gone with his own, and he's gone with Dennis Johnson and JoJo White, which is fair, but that weren't
the list. Fair. Yeah, I think we...
Ruski, 12383, has said, "This isn't fair at all. I'd rather cut my mother than cut any of these."
That's a good one. That's a good one.
At CCM546, we'll start Cousy, bench Rondo, and cut IT. Justin Trombino at Trombino20 would start Cousy and bench Rondo. There's a theme here. A guy whose name I can't pronounce, his Twitter name is LDA. Would again start Cousy and bench Rondo, and then we're back to shooting guard. So you're the only one that chose IT over Rondo, dude.
And I think it was more, like I said, more team construction rather than. I mean, I think he only played two and a half seasons with the Celtics, and Rondo's time obviously ended up with a ring and ended up.
I get that.
I just thought if I'm constructing a team, I've been saying it forever. Celtics kind of need to get a bucket guy, and Isaiah Thomas would be a perfect get me a bucket guy. Kind of a Jamal Crawford-esque six man.
Okay, so at shooting guard, we've got Jones, Allen, and White. Who are you going with?
This is a really tough one. I think I'm going to start Sam Jones because, you know, one of the all-time greats. Let me just look at some stats real quick. I had a bunch of players pulled up. I did not pull up Sam Jones. I am going JoJo White as my backup guy, mostly because it is what you did for the Celtics. And Ray Allen was a very pivotal part of West winning Banner 17, obviously. But I think that I believe that JoJo White, he's very underrated. Those 70s championships kind of go to the wayside almost. They're, you know, everyone knows about the 60s championships, the 80s championships, and the recent one. But the 70s era kind of, that was like a very dark age in basketball. I feel like a lot of people don't understand how good some of those players on those teams were. John Havlicek with his own team, Dave Cowens, who we'll get to later. And then JoJo White, Tiny Archibald was there for a little bit. JoJo White, 21, 23, 19, 18, 18, 18, 19, all points per game, year after year, was a multiple-time All-Star for the Celtics, 7 times, 2-time All-NBA, 2-time champion, the Finals MVP in 75 and 76 that season, 17, 4, and 5 career stats, 44% from the field at a mid-range heavy era. Also a pretty good assist guy. He got a couple sixes, a couple fives in there. I think he just brings more than what Ray Allen brought, you know, for his time. Ray Allen was sort of delegated to just be a spot-up shooter and a floor spacer, while JoJo White was kind of ran the show for Boston. And then I'm going Sam Jones to start it off. I just think, you know, he had multiple years, kind of a late bloomer. But 18, 19, 19, 26, 23, 22, 21, 17. To end his career at 35. You know, his best year was when he was 31 years old. Also a very, very good perimeter player defensively as well. I would take Sam Jones. Also one of the clutcher players from that era. Watch documentaries. Everyone said Sam Jones with the ball in his hand. His nickname is Mr. Clutch. I mean, and that's something I think that you have to take into consideration. 10-time champion, 5-time All-Star, 3-time All-NBA, a number retired. I'm going Sam Jones, JoJo White, and cutting Ray Allen.
That's fair. I can't argue. I mean, I'm starting White over Jones. That's the only difference. I'm still cutting Allen. Let me look through. Everybody that played the game with the players that were on, again, went with, oh no, so LDA chose you and went with Sam Jones over JoJo White. So did Justin Trombino, actually. Okay, so I'm on an island here. Just me and CCM546 that are choosing to start with JoJo over Jones.
I think a lot of that is because that 70s era kind of, you know, like I said, falls to the wayside. I feel like a lot of people know JoJo White was special. They know more about Sam Jones. Looking when I started looking at stats, I was like, I might go JoJo White here, but I was going to give the 10-time champion his kind of. I think that extra clutch factor kind of did it for me for Sam Jones. Like they said, I've seen, you know, multiple documentaries on the 60s and those Celtics runs, and they say, oh, you know, Sam Jones was really an unsung hero in all those. Everyone, you know, Cousy and Havlicek and Russell, probably better players all time, but I think Sam Jones really helped in some of those championships. So that's where I go, Sam Jones.
Okay, so the next guys on the list are Hondo, Pierce, and Bird. Cody, what I'm going to do is I'm going to just read mine out, then I'm going to let you do your breakdown, okay?
All right.
So I'm starting Bird, having Pierce as my backup, and cutting Hondo. That needs no explanation, dude. Bird and Pierce are two of the most iconic Celtics players to wear the jersey. There's a reason that both of them have been super successful and had great careers in the league. That's not taking anything away from Hondo. I just don't think that you can cut either of Bird or Pierce.
Yeah, it's definitely... This one was very interesting for me, but I think I am going to cut Paul Pierce.
Wow.
And Pierce is my favorite Celtic of all time. Like, when I started watching basketball, you know, me being only 20 years old, I started with those 08 teams, those 09 teams, those 10 teams, and I loved Paul Pierce. Like, you know, I kind of take those pull-up mid-range shots just like Paul Pierce did because I watched Paul Pierce. But Havlicek, man, did it for so long and led so many different teams. And it was one of those things where I think Havlicek's end to his career was so much more graceful than Paul Pierce's end of his career, where Pierce wasn't an all-time Celtic. He should have been, but he ended up not being. Havlicek started as a six-man or a guy off the bench. He was averaging 18, 19 points per game in limited action. Didn't become a full-time starter, if you're looking on minutes per game, until his age 27, 28 season. He was on the bench for a lot of his first seasons, and he was still putting up 20 points per game, kind of a point forward as well. In 1970-71, his age 30 season, he had 29 points per game, 7.5 assists, 9 rebounds. I mean, that's just phenomenal. On top of 45% field goal shooting and 82% free throw, no 3-point range in that time, and he never played with a 3-point line, as a lot of these guys to be on the list didn't. But I'm going to go John Havlicek, 13-time All-Star, 11-time All-NBA, 8-time NBA champion, 8-time All-Defensive, Finals MVP in 73-74, All-Rookie team as well. I mean, Paul Pierce, like I said, one of my favorites of all time. And I think his peak was better than Havlicek's, but I'm just taking Hondo just because of that ability to run. I think Bird first is no question, and I don't think you even have to handle Larry Bird. But I'm taking John Havlicek. I mean, at age 30, his age 34 season, he had 20, 17 at 35, 17, 18 at 36, 16 at 37 to go along with. He was just phenomenal. And like I said, in that 70s era, it kind of goes to the wayside. Not a lot of people know about basketball in the 70s. John Havlicek was one of the best players.
That's fair. I ain't going to argue with any of these, dude. I mean, this is such a hard one when it's all of your all of players from your team. It's easy when there's players that you don't like anyway, but this is difficult. Tom Lane, again, went Larry Bird and Paul Pierce. CCM546 went Bird and Pierce. Justin Trombino, Bird and Honda. So that's not bad. LDA went Bird and Hondo as well. That's split right down the middle, dude.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things where John Havlicek and Paul Pierce, I think, are so close. I just got to give the edge to Hondo there. I mean, like I said, Paul Pierce, one of my favorite players ever. And, you know, he had multiple seasons of pretty good stats as well. I mean, he was never looked upon as a bad player during his peak.
Okay, so then we go into power forward position. We've got, I can never pronounce this name, Heinsohn, Mikhail, and KG. Heinsohn, Mikhail, and KG. That's easy for me, right? Just because I'm such a big KG guy, and I love Kevin Mikhail. So I'd start KG, bench Mikhail, and cut Heinsohn.
Yeah, I think I would definitely cut Heinsohn as well. I mean, Tommy's a legend, but
I always say his name wrong, though, dude. I don't know if it's my accent or my pronunciation or what.
It might be the accent. I know it's a tough one regardless. But Tommy Heinsohn, definitely going legend in the broadcast booth. But Tommy's old man. He's losing it. I love Tommy. I hope he stays there forever. But
yeah, the guy's a G, dude.
He is a fun guy. My favorite is when he was drooling over Aaron Baines' penis on live television. And this
back
is an
to
actual
the dick thing. Jokes.
Back to the dick jokes. He actually was. There was one time he was like, I got a good look of Aaron Baines during a live game and was just talking about it. I love it. Every time we play LeBron, he just basically just calls LeBron a pussy. That's the funniest thing. Every single time LeBron touches the ball, Tommy calls him a baby and la baby. It's great. Tommy's number one in terms of broadcasters on this list, but not in terms of players. And this is a tough one because Kevin Garnett's best years were in Minnesota, but what he did for the Celtics obviously is no slouch either. And those years you could put up against some of the better players ever. He's still, you know, a defensive player of the year with the Celtics. NBA champion his first year with Boston. His scoring numbers were never where they were in Minnesota, but that was because he took that back seat to let, because it was Paul Pierce's team, and then Ray Allen needed some spotlight as well. So there's a big reason for that, and defensively, almost unmatched. Kevin McHale also was a pretty good defensive player, but also he has that experience coming off the bench. As he started, he actually is a two-time Sixth Man of the Year and started a lot of his career off the bench. Didn't get consistent playing time as a starter until the 86 championship year. The majority of all his playing time came off the bench from ages 23 to 27. So, I will start Kevin Garnett and bench Kevin McHale just because of Kevin McHale's ability to come off the bench and still be an effective player.
I'm just looking for him now. This one split opinion massively throughout everybody that took part. So, Tom Lane agreed with us. Start Garnett. Bench McHale. CCM has started McHale and bench KG.
Yeah, I was originally going to start McHale, but I think just because of that bench he had.
Justin Trombino started Tommy, bench KG, and just cut McHale clean.
Yikes.
LDA started McHale, bench Tommy, and cut KG. That one split opinion all over, dude.
Yeah, I mean, you got to give props to Tommy. I mean, he came into the league. Like, he never had a bad season. He only played, like, 8 of them, though. So that's a big reason. He only played, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 seasons.
And then finally, just to end, I know we're running towards the end of the podcast now, so let's get this one out. Is center. This one's still tough, to be fair, dude. It's Russell, tough, Cowens, man. And Parrish.
Yeah. You definitely gotta go Bill Russell, my favorite player of all time. You gotta go Bill there. I mean,
no one who took part did not start Russell. No one.
Yeah, I mean, he's a legend. He's, in my opinion, a top 10 player in the NBA. In history, excuse me, not currently. He probably would be currently if he played right now. I love Bill.
But, so it all comes down to who'd you cut and who'd you bench, Cowens or Parrish? I'm benching Parrish and cutting Cowens.
This is definitely a tricky one because Parrish is always that third guy. Dave Cowens was an NBA MVP, two-time champion, three-time All-Defensive, one of the biggest hustle guys in NBA history. If we think Marcus Smart is a hustle guy, this guy was on that level, if not more, as a big man too. Only 2 years in Boston did not become an all-star. In that year, he averaged 17 points and just about 15 and 10 rebounds, respectively, in those two seasons. A couple 20-point seasons, his rebound numbers were off the charts. He never averaged under 14 until his final 2 years in Boston. I mean, he was an absolute freak. But Parrish, on the other hand, I mean, he also was pretty good. He had the longevity. I think that what really helped him out is he was, Chief never didn't play ever. Like, he was always playing. He played for 20 years. This is a really tough one. And this one I was going back and forth. I think I'm going to go Parrish cut Cowens. Even though I think Cowens was a better player at their heights, I think I'm going to go Robert Parrish there.
And that's pretty much everybody did, dude. Only Justin Trombino chose Parrish over... Sorry. Everyone chose Parrish over Cowens, bar one person. And I've come off it now, so I can't tell you who it is. But one person chose Cowens over Parrish. So, dude, that's pretty much everything. I mean, we've had a really fan-interactive episode, which is great. Is there anything you want to jump into before we end it? We need Cody's hot takes.
You want to hear Cody's hot takes? Here's Cody's hot take. Aaron Baines will be a Celtic by the end of the season.
That's it? You're not going into the tangent? It's just that?
Aaron Baines will be a Celtic again by the end of the season. I think the Celtics will realize that their center position isn't what it really could be. You know, the Suns aren't going to be good. They might either cut Aaron Baines or trade him back to Boston. I think the Baines pain train ends up back in Boston by the end of the season.
And that's it, guys. So you've been listening to the Celtic Sense with Adam and Cody. We'll be back again on Wednesday. We've got a special guest coming in for that recording, so make sure you tune into that. The Locker Room Guy is going to have some good stories for us. And then we'll be back again on Friday. This mailbag's going to be every week, so if you want a question answered, then you can either hit us up on Twitter. If you don't have Twitter, hit us up on IG. If you don't have IG, I don't know, dude, we're everywhere. Just find us.
Find us. We're somewhere.
Yeah, we're everywhere.
Find us on the street. Ask me personally. Let's do it.
Yeah, ask him. Don't be mean to him, though, just because he likes to talk about people's dicks.
Yeah, just call me Corey, and then we'll be best friends.
Okay, guys, so you'll catch us again later in the week. We hope you had a good time. See you later. Peace.